Agenda Oriol. Welcome back to Bird's Eye View. When it comes to the Orioles, this weekly podcast is your official source for a lack of insight and for baseless opinions. Today is April 18th, 2024, and this is episode 387. My name is Jake English.
And I'm Scott Magnus.
And on today's show, we will hear all motions to the contrary.
We'll also go around the bases.
And we'll do all that right after we lubricate the show. That's right. It's time for the drink of the week. Scott Magnus, what is your drink of this week?
Jake, I am drinking a Dogfish Head Mandarin and Mango Crush ale brewed with mandarin oranges, mango, and natural flavors added. I thought I was going to like this a lot more than I thought. It's not bad, but it's also not great.
That's a shame because the can is delightful.
The can's delightful, and it is part of the 2024 art series. I feel like this is heavy natural flavors. I almost feel like
it's the Sunny D of beer.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I'm actually thinking more about along the lines of like, you know, the like orange crushes that you get in a can. Mm. It almost tastes like that. And again, it does say mango crush on there, but the fact that it was an ale, I was just like, well, then it'll still be a little, you know, beerish. But definitely tastes much more like a crush, which is interesting.
Well, Scotty, just to make sure I understand, I might have to liberate one from you. Just out of science.
That's fine.
I'm a man of science.
I'm not saying it's bad, but I'm just saying it's not what I was hoping for.
I myself am drinking a gin and tonic with Sapphire. Mm. And it is yummy and delicious. And if you are interested to see what we are drinking on an hourly, daily, inning-by-inning basis, please come find us on Untappd. I'm at JakeE4025.
I'm at MAGN8606. And with that, it's time for a checkup.
Time for your checkup, time for your checkup. I'm gonna check your ears, check your eyes, find out how much you've grown. Time for your checkup.
Just gonna listen to your heartbeat, fix you up, ready to go.
Time for your checkup. It's okay if you giggle.
This will only tickle a little.
Time for your checkup, time for your checkup.
The elbow ouchies continue, Jake. Tyler Wells was diagnosed with an elbow inflammation. No timeline for this one.
How big a deal is this? Because I hear starting pitcher and elbow, and of course, you know,
you
panic.
Yeah, you constrict and, you know, you enter into the fetal position. But I don't know. I don't think this one is a disaster. But also maybe that's just because of the talent, and maybe if this would have happened to, you know, like a Corbin Burns, I probably would be super panicked is the best way to put it. So,
well, the other thing is that part of me hopes a little bit, I don't know that I can hope a lot, but part of me hopes a little bit that this, you know, helps explain maybe some of the performance that we've seen from Tyler Wells, and that maybe, you know, given some time to rest up and heal up.
So you want bad things to happen to people in order to basically give logic to other bad things happening.
I mean, I would have phrased it differently, but you're not totally wrong.
Right. That is so Catholic of you.
I'm feeling very guilty about it. All right. So Tyler Wells has some elbow inflammation. We hope that everything works out just fine. CNL Perez has been throwing. He'll progress soon to some batting practice.
What's he dealing with?
He's got an oblique.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Kyle Bradish does have the right elbow ouchies, but he threw 3 scoreless innings at Bowie on Tuesday.
With good fastball velocity, John Mioli was there getting him at 94 to 95. Staney was throwing 95 to 96. I'm going to believe John Mioli with his pocket radar. That is not a euphemism. It's the best way to put it. But yeah, I mean, that was a very encouraging start from Kyle Bradish. Very encouraging.
I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want to put bad things into the universe. I'm rooting hard for him to get here as soon as possible.
Yeah. And then there's John Means, who is also coming back from an elbow issue and did not get out of the first inning in his rehab start with 30 pitches. And the velocity kicked up a little bit. He was up to 92, 93, but no real swing and miss pitches and a lot of hard contact.
Yeah.
taking care of business every day.
Let's just
see what happens.
It's gonna be fine. Everything's gonna be fine.
We'll see what happens. What's the worst that can happen? Oh,
yeah. Jeez.
All right. 280 characters or less, or other media forms this week on the socials.
Let's do it. Let's start on Threads. I'm going to start with a thread, a post, whatever this is, from Kyle Goon. With a seemingly endless line of exciting prospects, he writes, the Orioles' future can sometimes seem brighter than its present. Cedric Mullins' hot streak this week is a testament to how good some of the longstanding veterans can be for a winning team. And then a link to his banner article. I love the fact that Cedric Mullins is still a good ball player, right? And this team doesn't need him to be all things at all times, but he is still thumping the ball and he is still playing a mean center field.
It was weird of, you know, he had a really quiet spring training, really poor spring training. And then the first week he did not hit so well. He did have a home run, I believe, in that first week, but people kept coming back and saying, like, is it time for Cedric Mullins? Like, how long of a leash do we have? And again, I think we're going to see this up and down period from a Cedric Mullins. I don't think Cedric Mullins is going to be what he was this past week. But again, you know, Cedric Mullins, you know, outside the plate has continued to demonstrate this season so far how good of an outfielder in center field he is. And Adam Jones has even said it. This may be the year that Cedric Mullins finally gets his gold glove.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. Thread comes from by Patrick Flowers. Tweets or toasts or toots or something, threads. He threads the needle and says as follows, the Orioles can't stop hitting home runs. Baltimore has an ML best 27 home runs and AL best 100 runs in their first 17 games. More on the must-see Orioles and some of the most impressive rookies in baseball in today's MLB at Bleacher Nation.
I need an update to the Birdland Power Company t-shirt. I need it in the worst way. I need it in ways I can't describe. I need it in ways that are inappropriate for this podcast.
So you need everyone that, in essence, has had multiple home runs this past week, and at the very bottom, you needed it to write, we hit the foul pole?
I do. I need all of that. Okay. Birdland Power Company. Orioles, do something about it, please. Next, let's head over to the place that used to be called Twitter, and this is something that used to be called Tweet by Jake Rill. At Jake D. Rill, who, of course, writes for MLB.com for the Orioles. Other notable players who went 1-for-25 or worse in the first 7 games of their MLB career, like Orioles top prospect Jackson Holliday. Alex Bregman went 1-for-28 and 1-for-32 through 8 games. Aramis Ramirez, 1-for-25 and 1-for-28 through 8. And some bum named Willie Mays, 1-for-26.
Hayes?
No. Played like Hayes, hit like Hayes. Mays? It's fine. Anyway, the point I think that he's trying to make is that everything's going to be fine, and I tend to agree with
him. Yeah, I think it's going to be okay, too. But there's a lot of things that are not okay in Birdland, and I mean, this requires us to really, you know, take it and take some action on it. So, Jake, I'm going to serve you this notice. I expect to see you in 30 days. You know, our disagreements and conflict will, in essence, be heard at that time.
Fair enough. The Baltimore Orioles have a long and storied legal tradition. From the kangaroo courts held in the clubhouse during the team's golden era to the practice of law by the team's former ownership group, the legal profession itself has been interwoven with the history of the Baltimore Orioles. And it is in that spirit that Bird's Eye View is proud to present the newest arbitration-based unreality court program, Flag Court. Beyond the walls of justice, beyond the field of fair and foul play, there is a court where cases are heard to determine guilt and innocence in high-fly crimes and misdemeanors. This court is Birdland's highest court of the appeal. Welcome to Flag Court.
Hey,
Flag court is now in session. The Honorable Judge Nolan Reinhold presiding, that is Birdland's favorite Orioles slash Arrested Development themed judge.
Good afternoon. Welcome to this session of Flag Court. First, I'd like to address the counsel. Gentlemen, your antics have become well known in these parts, and I warn you that this court will not tolerate a lack of insight and baseless opinion. Here we seek only the facts. And perhaps a 1989 Fleer Bill Ripken card. As we review these cases expediently, gentlemen, I will rule if the defendant is a home run or if it is a sad grown man who steals baseballs from children. Now, case number 46 on the docket is the Roar versus Hydration Station.
Yes, Your Honor. In the matter of the Road versus Hydration Station, we have a very simple case in which the tried and true post-Homer celebration known colloquially as the Dong Bong was...
Objection, Your Honor.
Come on.
Won't Jesus. Someone think of the children? Surely my esteemed colleague here can use the phrase Homer hose when he speaks of this device. We don't want to give anybody the wrong idea that these 26 young men are in any way well-versed in the consumption of the alcoholic beverages sold and advertised in the stadium.
Your objection is overruled, and you, sir, are an idiot. Please continue, Counselor.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, as I was saying, Dong Bong was replaced by a weird handlebar off a kid's bicycle or something. This was an affront to Birdland and was later replaced by the hydration station. We move that this replacement be officially recognized as a home run, Your Honor, and move that all records of the handlebars be stricken from the permanent record.
Mr. English.
Your Honor, there is no question that the hydration station is an improvement over the handlebars, but we move that the hydration station is an over-the-top production that represents a solution in search of a problem. A single Homer hose was a perfect celebration in 2023, a season in which the Orioles won 101 games, and any change could impact the vibes, which, Your Honor, we move were immaculate.
This court has reviewed the evidence and finds the hydration station to be a home run. From the ability to involve multiple teammates in the home run celebration, to the bullpen engaging in their own Dong Bong version of Fantasy Boss, the vibes are not in question. I hereby rule in favor of the hydration station. Home run. Case 51 on the docket is... The Roar versus Camden Yards attendance.
Yes, Your Honor, we are just as tired as having this conversation as you are of hearing it. The Orioles won 101 games, as I mentioned, in 2023. They made a blockbuster offseason move. They brought in new ownership, including a group that has Orioles legend Cal Ripken Jr. This team has done everything it has been asked to do, including winning, if not ahead of schedule, on schedule. And in response, these Orioles, quote-unquote, faithful, have amassed a rank 23 in the league at an average of 23,314 fans per game. It's embarrassing here in 2024, in what could be a season of destiny, to have such a great team play in front of so many green seats.
Look, this is a tired argument, Your Honor. I've gone through the facts, I've gone through the details, and I found that, you know, the individual that is ranting about this attendance policy has only been to one game in this whole season as it is. Look, the Orioles have averaged just over 23,000 last season, but before that, in a non-strike shortened season since 2019, they were nearly about 16,000, 9,000, and 16,000. These things take time. And, you know, my former prosecutor was just arguing about the children. School's still in session, everybody. This is a case that should not be discussed yet until at least the children are out for summer. The Orioles have had only 12 home games. This sample size is way too small to make any ridiculous claims about fan support.
Counselor, I must say that is a compelling argument. Rather than rule on this as either a home run or a sad grown man stealing baseballs from children, I'm going to remove this case from the docket. Bailiff, please take this case paperwork down to Kevin Gregg's office and have him set it on fire to the whole lot. Yes, I said the whole lot. Thank you. The next case on the docket is the Roar versus Austin Hayes' slump.
Yes, Your Honor. Austin Hayes, how do I say this? He's been terrible this season. The facts are plain and simple. His offensive performance has been so bad that it begs the question. No. It demands the question, should Austin Hayes be sent to the minors so that he can find his swing again? This is not hyperbole. This is not make-believe. Austin Hayes currently has a -4.6 weighted runs created plus. That's a minus in front of the number that's supposed to be a positive. He has a 100 BABIP, a 25K percentage, and a WOBA of 136. That's worse than J.J. Hardy. Your Honor, these are not major league numbers. Even as a beloved member of the team, as a former American League All-Star, as a bridge between this era of Orioles excellence and the before times, Hayes must go down.
Your Honor, Your Honor. There is no denying that Austin Hayes has been putrescent at the plate in 2024. But the Orioles are winning games despite his taking up a spot on the roster. As a capable defensive backup, he is not hurting the Orioles, particularly while the likes of Colton Cowser have been demanding regular playing time with incredible performance. Hayes is not holding anyone back in the minors. Any young outfielder would have to ride the bench behind the milkman. And as such, Hayes should get to work with major league hitting coaches and help the team as best he can through this prolonged slump.
This is not an easy one to determine a clear verdict. However, having heard the evidence, having watched my fair share of Dark Ages baseball games, I must rule that Austin Hayes' slump, and more specifically, overreactions thereto, are grown men stealing balls from children. The last case on the docket for today is number 442, the roar versus organizational depth.
Your Honor, in a fan base that is constantly waiting for the other foot to fall, it has been difficult to believe that the Orioles are not only good, but they have a minor league system built to sustain a winning franchise. As young talents have been promoted, including three successive top prospects in baseball, there have been whispers. Yes, whispers that the system could be thinning.
Objection, Your Honor. Speculation. This narrative simply does not hold truth to the facts and is just some rantings of some, well, American University poli-sci degree. I just can't. In addition to the stable of young talent developing and dominating in the minors, the organization pro scouts have continued to identify diamonds in the rough. And if we've learned anything from the movie Atlanta, diamonds in the rough are incredibly valuable. And if the arrival of Ryan O'Hearn was not enough to convince us, the court, I direct your attention to the 4 2/3 innings that the Orioles just got out of Albert Suarez. Yes, a 34-year-old journeyman that has returned after 8 years to Major League Baseball.
Gentlemen, save your breath. I have heard enough. My ruling is that the Orioles' organizational depth is a home run. This being the completion of the court's business for today, I will take this time to remind you all that Flag Court is Birdland's highest court in the land and that these rulings are final, without the possibility of appeal. Flag Court stands adjourned. Wave it bye-bye.
Flag Court is taped in front of an audience of two suspicious gray cats. All defendants found to be a sad grown man stealing baseballs from children will be walked across every pothole in the Camden Yards parking lot and made to watch 2014 ALCS highlights.
Folks, it's time for us to go around the bases, and we're going to start at home plate because all the Orioles did this week was hit home runs.
Wait, we're gonna start at home.
Yeah, we're gonna start at home.
Where will we go after that?
Home.
And then
home.
Followed, of course, by
home.
All right, let's start at home, Scotty. I want to talk about Craig Kimbrel. He's been good. He's been very good this season, and I will admit that so far I was totally and completely wrong about this. I thought that he was going to disappoint here in Birdland. You know, knowing that we needed a dependable back of the arm bullpen arm to fill the rather large shoes of Felix Bautista. And that, you know, maybe Kimbrel was a name from a little too long ago to adequately do so. I thought bad things were on the horizon.
Well, I mean, and it's fair for you to think this. I mean, you go back and you think about the last time the Orioles went out and bought a closer. You're talking Dark Ages baseball in reality. So it's been a long time, and you know, a little bit of that scar tissue is there. And again, you can look at what Craig Kimbrel was doing in September and October last year with the Phillies, and you would be like, all right, did the wheels finally come off the bus, especially going into spring training? But, you know, if anything, you're looking at Kimbrel right now and you're like, oh my gosh, he is as good as advertised. And, you know, he's posting some ridiculous stats, 15.75 Ks per nine. And, you know, the velocity is still not, you know, the velocity of old Kimbrel, but he's making it work. He's moving his pitches. He's got that kind of rising fastball. And it's been really impressive on that basis.
Yeah, it's really wild to watch him work high in the zone the way he does at times. And, you know, I'm always worried about him tipping over before he delivers. I worry about that guy's balance. He looks like he's got an inner ear problem as he sets up for a pitch.
So he just needs like a neti pot, basically?
Basically. But I was wrong, Scott. I was wrong.
Do you still have confidence when he comes out, like that, you know, everything is gonna be okay?
I have developed that confidence.
I still don't know if I have that confidence in a one run game. I still think I'm like things are gonna happen here where someone's gonna get on base, they're gonna steal a base, and then that person's gonna score.
Well,
in a two run game, I have no issues whatsoever, but in a one run game, I'm still a little queasy.
I don't know that there is an Oriole that I feel good about being able to hold runners. Like, that has been a thing that that we as a team seem to struggle with. But I won't say that my confidence is bulletproof when he's on the mound, but I guess on the journey that I took getting here, I was ready for way worse.
Right. Well, again, he is pitching immaculately, which means that if we're talking about it on the podcast, it's about to be a really brutal week for him. But let's go back to home plate, and let's talk about someone that is not doing so well, and that's Cole Irvin, or Swervin' Irvin. You watch him pitch, and it's not terrible, but it's also not really great.
So the last time he pitched, Ben McDonald went out of his way.
Yeah.
I mean, just did all the gymnastics he could possibly do to say, look, it really wasn't that bad a start from Irvin. And here he was talking about a 4 2/3 appearance in which he gave up, I don't know, I think it was 2 runs. My question is Irvin running into some bad luck in addition to not being stupendous, or is the likes of Ben McDonald being charitable?
I think he's being charitable. I mean, you looked at that 4 2/3 start really struck me. He was at like 81 pitches. And Hine immediately comes out of the dugout and goes to the bullpen. Doesn't even give a consideration of like, well, if he gets one more out, if he gets a win, get through 5. Not even a thought. Just like, boom, you're gone. And that tells me that, you know, he's like, I need the amount of pitches you can throw, but I don't trust you to basically go deep. And he specifically came out when he was about to go a third time through the order. So that tells me, nope, we're going to treat you like a long man, and that is the best you're going to be.
You know, those guys are valuable in their own right. And I think,
but they're not that valuable.
Well, I think once there are more options for the rotation, Irvin can be a valuable piece in the bullpen. You know, when we do need long guys,
would you rather I see Irvin or Bauman come in?
I don't know, man. I mean, Bauman is one who I have mixed feelings on.
Do you have mixed feelings about Irvin?
Yes. Yes. I have mixed feelings about both of them.
Yeah. I don't know if it really bothers me one way or the other to have one over the other.
I mean, Bauman at least has velocity as a tool.
That's great. And if it's straight as an arrow, it just goes out of the ballpark a lot quicker. I don't know which one I prefer, honestly. I really don't. That's going to be a really difficult decision, but I think that's what the decision's going to have to come down to. Like, is it Bauman or is it Irvin as your long man in the pen? I don't think you can keep both.
And neither have options?
Neither have options.
Yeah, of course not. Okay. Well, let's go back home.
Yep.
And let's talk about Albert Suarez.
Yeah. That was a pretty impressive start on Wednesday. I know everyone was talking about it beforehand when Wales got injured. And it was going to be, you know, everyone basically said it's between Zimmerman or Suarez. And more than likely, it's going to be Zimmerman because, you know, why risk it? Zimmerman's got an option. He can come up. He can go right back down when you need him. No big deal. But man, Suarez came out and was throwing, you know, mid-90s and movement and, you know, generating a decent amount of whiffs. I mean, I wouldn't say it was a perfect performance. He had a lot of hard hit balls off of him. But again, you look at it compared to Wells and you look at it compared to against Carl Irvin, you're like, for a fifth starter, that's not terrible is the best way to describe it. I would never advocate for him to be, you know, a playoff starter or anything like that. But for a fifth starter, I'm like, it's not bad. And if you're a spot start, that was really impressive. I mean, just think about the nerves that you've got to have. You're 34 years old. You're coming back up to Major League Baseball for the first time in so many years. And that's what you go out there and pump. Like, that's just really impressive to me.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing I wonder about with Suarez is, you know, could he be a useful piece in the bullpen?
I think so. I mean, if you looked at how he commanded pitches and how the pitches moved, I definitely think that he had that aspect of, you know, some interesting aspects for a bullpen standpoint. And again, you know, this was one game, but this is a difficult standpoint because, like you said, we always say, like, don't rely on spring training stats. But for someone like Suarez, you almost have to look at spring training stats to a certain regard. And again, that was when he went against the Phillies. He did really well. He's been kind of up and down, though. Like, he, in essence, like, does performances like this, and the next time he comes back out and he's going two or three innings in the minors and giving up five runs. So I'm not here to champion that Suarez is the next, you know, Messiah. But I will say, from a Suarez standpoint, we talked about it earlier with John Means. John Means does not look ready at this given time. If Zimmerman would have came out yesterday, or even Suarez would have came out yesterday and got lit up, I think the Orioles would have been in a more difficult position of like, all right, what are we going to do on this basis? Even maybe the conversation of like, do we need to start rushing a Cade Povich to getting into the majors? And I don't think that's a good idea whatsoever. So I think this gives them a little bit more rope to play with. And just to see what Suarez has. And again, you might be right. It might just be, you know, after two or three starts, you know, Means gets it together. But yeah, like I said, I definitely want to see more from Suarez in the future. And again, you know, what we were joking around in our shtick standpoint in terms of scouting, but part of this is also analytics. Suarez ranked really high in Stuff Plus. And we'll get into Stuff Plus in a future podcast. But I don't know. It looks like there's something there is the best way to put it. That's what I would say. And that's what Stuff Plus kind of tells you. It's like, it tells you how filthy your pitches are. And when I was watching Suarez pitch it, I'm like, all right, I get what they're trying. We'll see how effective he is.
Well, here. Let's hope that it works out. Let's go back home.
Yeah.
Just take another trip around the bases. And let's talk about Grayson Rodriguez.
Okay.
I am delighted at the season that Grayson Rodriguez is having so far. Not perfect.
Yeah.
But Grayson Rodriguez is quickly becoming dependable plus. I love it.
I think that's true. You know, I think he's having a good season. People keep mentioning the aspect of like when Corbin Burns pitches, the Orioles are 4-0. When Grayson Rodriguez pitches, the Orioles are 4-0. Here's my thing with Grayson. I you know me, I love Grayson. I think he's a great pitcher. You know, on the stats for the season right now, he's got a 10.13 Ks per nine, which is better than last year at 9.52. About the same walks per nine at 3.00. Home runs per nine are about the same. Ground balls are a little down this year. And again, he's pitching to a 2.63 ERA and a 3.58 FIP. Awesome. Like, great, good.
No,
like,
notes.
No notes. That sounds good. Here's what really bothers me about Grayson, though. And it doesn't make any sense to me. He's got such a fiery personality is the best way to put it. But it seems like every single time the Orioles score runs and he comes out the next game, next inning, he gives up a run. And it shouldn't bother me, but it bothers me a lot.
Well, now I'm going to be on the lookout for that. Thanks a lot, jerk.
It just bothers me. And I don't know why. And maybe it's something, it's not that big of a deal. Because again, if you look at his ERA and the FIP standpoint, it's not that huge of an issue. But I do think the shutdown inning is a really big deal. Like, if you're sitting on the bench for that long, And then Unison's coming to the game. I really think it's important to basically get those shutdown innings in order to get the get the hitters right back up again. So it's a minor quibble, but I think it's something that, you know, slightly bothers me. The only other thing I would say too is, and we saw this in his last start, he was pitching like a man on fire, you know, six pitches one inning, you know, eight the next, 10 the next, and stuff like that. But as he got further and further in the game, and again, the Orioles' lead was getting bigger and bigger on that basis, he started to get a little, I wouldn't say complacent even. Like, he didn't have that, like, wow factor, or like the put-out pitch. So I think that's something to keep an eye on of, like, you know, when he gets against tough hitting teams, does he have the ability to be sneaky, deceptive, and have that put-out pitch in order to get through really tough teams?
Here's what I've been most impressed by this season is that he has held it together when he does not have his best stuff.
I agree with that.
There was a game that he was absolutely dominant in which he was locating the fastball really well and his changeup was
gone.
It was dominant. Nope. And then in that next start, the changeup was not there for him.
Right.
Right. And so instead of falling apart, as you know, we may have seen in the past, he just moved on and went with what worked. And I really feel like we are seeing him develop as a pitcher. All of those quibbles that you said, totally valid. Yep. But I've been delighted to watch Grayson Rodriguez pitch, like with a capital P, this season. And I look forward to looking back, you know, at the end of the season and looking at the progression of him as he gets all this major league time and hopefully, you know, works through some of that stuff that you were talking about. But in addition, logs that history of, hey, I pitched like crap today, and I still gave up two runs and gave the team a chance to win.
No argument. And I completely agree with you. And I think you're absolutely right about that. And the other thing that we have to give consideration as well is, like, last year was his really only the first full year. And then again, from an age standpoint, he's only 24 years old. He didn't pitch college ball or anything like that. You know, he's been in the Orioles organization his entire post-high school career. So he's very young. So you might be absolutely right that he's getting a feel for learning how to pitch, mix his pitches, where he needs to locate, feel for balls and stuff like that. So you might be right. It might be a little bit of a renaissance aspect of, like, he is in essence going to get better and better as the year progresses, as he learns more and more to pitch. Again, even last year, when he was pitching for the Baltimore Orioles, he only had 122 innings pitched in Major League Baseball last year. He had 41 also in AAA last year as well. So again, I'm not worried about innings pitch from a pitch count standpoint. But I do agree with you that I think he is learning the ropes and figuring out how to be a pitcher and not be a thrower. And I think Palmer has said similar aspects to that as well.
Well, we have gone around and around and around and around the bases. And Scotty, to your point about things that keep getting better and better as the season progresses, it's time to take a look at Fantasy Boss.
Oh, when it comes to kissing, I just gotta keep insisting on, oh, baby. You sure do swing.
When it comes to kissing, I just got to keep insisting on, daddy. You are the king.
Baby, you've got me beat up and down, inside out and across. Ooh, yeah.
But in the middle of the night, when the moon is shining bright, oh, you're the boss.
Scotty, you realize what happened here, right?
No, I did not.
You couldn't win this week because 280 sitcom series themes in a single podcast would have burst the universe.
Would have destroyed the world, absolutely, no doubt about it. But man, what a week of Fantasy Boss. What a week of Fantasy Boss. So for those that don't remember, last week's Fantasy Boss category was dongs. I went with Anthony Santander.
A great pick.
Jake went with Cedric Mullins, and it was, you know, we were recording on Thursday night. We saw Anthony Santander hit his first home run. I was just like, great, 1-0 lead. And they kind of battled forth back and forth. And Anthony Santander came into Wednesday's game down 2-1 against Cedric Mullins. And Anthony hits a home run in the mid-innings. And I'm like, yes, like, tied it up.
Let's go.
You know, we're going to keep it 1-0, all good. And, you know, in the ninth inning, Cedric Mullins walks up to the plate. And I said to myself, Jake's got this. And my wife just turned to me and said, what? And I said, Jake's got this. And she's just like, what does that mean? I was like, just watch. Cedric hits the home run. And I'm like,
Kevin Brown called it too.
But I was like, all right, I'm okay losing fantasy boss on that, is the best way to put it. So that was one of the best fantasy boss weeks that I think we've ever had on Bird's Eye View. So I tip my cap to you and Cedric Mullins. Congratulations.
I don't think I won fantasy boss. I think Birdland won.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right. So I am up 2-0 in this early season contest. And as the victor, I now turn over to you, sir, to pick this week's fantasy boss category.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with extra base hits.
Ooh.
So I'm thinking people that are going to have to like barrel up the ball. So it doesn't just have to be homers. And again, we're going to Kansas City. So like it's a little bit deeper in Kauffman. There's a lot more weirdness in Kauffman too, from like the doubles and the triples standpoint as well. So maybe you want to pick some people with some speed. But let's go extra base hits this week.
I am going to go a little off the beaten path.
Okay.
I hope. I'm going to go with Ryan O'Hearn.
We're going to get to Ryan O'Hearn in just a second. Ryan O'Hearn, I think, is a great pick. I think it's
specifically for extra base hits. I think that's yeah, in Kauffman. Yeah,
I think Ryan O'Hearn is a really good pick.
And that's where he came from, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
So I could go chalk and just be like, I think Gunnar eventually has to start breaking out just like he has been doing. And I kind of want to do that. So I'm going to do that. I'm just going to go chalk and just say it. My other individual that was in my head, that if I had to pick someone for extra base hits, has to be one of the more clutchy players on the Baltimore Orioles right now.
Jackson Holliday.
No, but he's going to break it out as well. Like let's give him some credit as well. But it's the individual that is currently leading Major League Baseball in win probability added. Jordan Westberg was my other thought as well.
Yeah, I have had a really hard time not writing Jordan Westberg in 9 times as my
goal. Nine times.
Well,
like I said, we're gonna figure out who has the most amount of extra base hits. Jake is going with Ryan O'Hearn. I'm gonna go chalk with Gunnar Henderson. We will figure out who owns it. And with that, there was a lot of good. And there was a little bit of bad, and there was a smidge of ugly. And this week in Birdland. So let's get into that next, in the good, the bad, and the ugly.
That's right. It's time again for the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because the quality of Scott Magnus's rants exceed my own, I'm going to go first. My good for this week, and by the way, it was a 5-2 week of Orioles baseball.
Yeah.
I was tempted to go good, good, good this week. But
you didn't want to be yelled at.
I can't go to that well too often. My good is Ryan O'Hearn, mm-hmm. who in this past week got regulars innings, right? This is not part-time play right here. He had a 207 weighted runs created plus a 456 WOBA. And Scotty, he did all of this with a 235 BABIP. And that says to me that this is not the luck dragon speaking. This is a pretty true week of just fantastic offensive baseball.
I completely agree with you. This has been a really impressive week for Ryan O'Hearn. And frankly, I mean, if we're being absolutely candid with Ryan O'Hearn, it's been a really impressive season so far for Ryan O'Hearn. So Ryan O'Hearn is also my good for the week, but it's also going to kind of be, you know, an asterisk on the standpoint of saying, like, I want to call out some stats for you really quickly of where he stands currently on the season. Currently on the season, on an expected weighted on-base average, Ryan O'Hearn currently has a 531 expected weighted on-base average. That is number one in Major League Baseball.
Holy smokes. At this time.
He has an expected batting average of 397. That is good for number one in Major League Baseball.
That sounds good.
He has an expected slugging of 824. Once again, good for number one in baseball. Average exit velocity of 93.7, 94th percentile. Barrel percentage of 16.7, good for 94th percentile in Major League Baseball. Chase rate of only 15.1%, that's good for 97th percentile in Major League Baseball. a K percentage, which again is going to be similar to the chase percentage standpoint, at 9.6, which again is good for 98th percentile on that basis. Ryan O'Hearn is slapping the ball. Like when the ball hits the bat, it cracks hard. Like you hear and you're just like, that's going to be extra base hits or 100 mile per hour out. Like he is whacking the ball.
And this is a guy who was worried about some serious regression.
Yep. Everyone was, honestly. Like everyone was worried, like, all right, it's going to be interesting to see if he regresses. But again, 30 years old. He looks like he is a late bloomer. And
Steve Pierce 2.0.
He looks super impressive, like super, super impressive. So it gets into this weird dynamic. We talked about it in the offseason. I was expecting it to be a Ryan O'Hearn, Ryan Mountcastle platoon. And now you're looking at it like, how do you not have Ryan O'Hearn in the lineup more often than not? So
it's particularly hard when you have so many instances in which Adley and McCann are in the lineup mm-hmm. at the same time, which I think has happened like seven times this season.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're going to need to get O'Hearn in the lineup using the DH in some fashion.
Yeah. But I just feel like O'Hearn is one of those individuals that we're not going to talk about much. And it's one of those standpoints of like, he doesn't play a great first base defensively compared to Ryan Mountcastle. But I think we have to call out how good he has been so far this season in terms of slapping the ball. It's just been really impressive.
And a super easy guy to root for, too.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Super easy guy.
Yeah.
All right. My bad this week is going to go to Jackson Holliday, but not in like a judgy, ugly way. Mm-hmm. Delighted to see him get his first hit. I cannot imagine the pressure that guy is dealing with. It's just bad that it's beginning like this in such a fashion that there's so much talk about it. Mm-hmm. He's going to be fine, right? This is going to be a great player. It sucks that it's you know, so much focus in this way. I will say the Orioles are winning, mm-hmm. and they're winning with Jackson Holliday not doing a whole lot of the plate, which is ideal, right? Can't wait for him to break out. Can't wait for him to become a productive major league hitter. But for the meantime, while all the talk is happening, it just feels bad.
Yeah, I'm going to go, and my bat is going to go to someone that, you know, was on the team and then quickly came off the team. But Jonathan Heasley just was not it. I mean, I was at the game on Friday watching it, and Heasley comes in, and I'm watching him pitch, and I'm like, I don't see anything. Like, there's nothing there. Like, there's nothing of interest. He's just throwing meatballs across the plate and not fooling the Brewers whatsoever. So a really bad performance. I know he had an option, and they put him back down into the minors, but I kept looking at him like, I don't even see what the purpose of him on the 40-man roster is right now. So he's one of my individuals that are bad. He's probably one of my candidates that is probably going to be next on, you know, the DFA scrap once the Orioles find their next, you know, hidden gem, as it were. But I was not impressed by Jonathan Heasley whatsoever.
Fair. My ugly is getting blown out on Apple TV's game. That was not a fun game to watch. It was not a fun game to watch, and it was really disappointing because, you know, it's one of those things that has a wider audience than just Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Orioles, historically, I feel, you know, just got lit up on national televised games. And sure enough, they got lit up on that Apple TV game. It was ugly. It was like, and particularly ugly when, you know, there was a bit of a fracas. And then that was all the announcers wanted to see was, you know, fight, 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 fight. It was not a fun game to watch. It was ugly.
Yeah. Mine is an ugly / good. Is that allowed?
It's so ugly it's good, or is it so good it's ugly?
It's so good that it's ugly.
I'm terrified, but go ahead.
All right. So,
by the way, you never get to say that a thing about me breaking the rules from here on out.
Of course not. I think we can all admit that this week's Bark at the Park was an absolute joy to watch. An absolute joy, 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 joy to watch. You know, watching Kevin Brown, in essence, get up there, talk with, you know, dogs in his hands, Ben McDonald getting up there, talking hand. Love the aspect that, and this is not anything new, but like Barks was there specifically doing, you know, donations. They were doing a shirt with the Orioles in that standpoint as well. I think that's awesome. Here's my ugly. There's a lot of dog owners out there. There has to be a better way to, in essence, get some more sections to be able to hold dogs. Those tickets sell out instantly, like instantly. Like I went on this week because they opened up tickets for the September 18th game. And by the time I went on, within like 2 or 3 minutes of with them posting it, sold out. And like, there's got to be, if this is that popular, there has to be a way to facilitate more dogs in the park.
All right. I have two things about Bark in the Park that I'd like to say. First, how is it not Bark, B-A-R-C, in the park? How have they not, how have we not done that?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Second thing, I need to express to you how jealous I am of people who are able to do Bark in the Park.
Yeah.
We have a dog, and our dog is...
Albus would be fine.
No, our dog is a jerk. Our dog is an absolute jerk. Look, he's a sweetheart. We love him, but he is the prototypical pandemic puppy.
Yeah.
Very poorly socialized, does not get along with other dogs. He's a Napoleon, very tiny, and thinks that...
We're talking about the dog here, not you, right?
He's in this instance, we are talking about the dog. I can't take Albus to Bark in the Park, and it just seems like such great fun. It seems like such great fun. So, you know, if we're there at the park and I come and I obnoxiously talk to your dog, I apologize. It's just jealousy talking.
So, like, can we like expand this in the future? Like, if it was Bark in the Park, can we like do like Pussy in the Yard or no? No?
Yikes.
No?
Yikes.
You're a cat person.
I am a cat person.
But again, and
can you imagine though, like all the cats on the field that you see on replays? No.
Yeah. Don't trust cats. But loved Bark in the Park. Orioles, if you can find some way to open up a few more sections for Bark in the Park, highly encourage it. I understand there's issues with, we'll call it fluids, is the best way to describe it. But please,
in the best case scenario,
but just please, like, try to figure out a way to open up a few more sections of the park for more barking is the best way to put it.
How on brand for Bird's Eye View is it, by the way, that we're talking about problematic fluids?
Objection, Your Honor.
Play the music. Let's blow the save. Scott, I don't want to shock you, but I'm going to speak for a minute about sports aesthetics when it comes to uniforms.
Oh, hello.
I saw something delightful the other day. Delightful. And I didn't notice it at first. Mm-hmm. It had to be pointed out to me by brilliant minds on the internet. The Baltimore Orioles wore their black jerseys with the regular home hats.
Really? When did they do that?
This last time that they wore black. And my question is, is the tyranny of the O's cap over?
So let me get this straight. They wore the black uniform with the black cap.
Like, no, the home cap, the tricolor.
They wore with the tricolor hats, and not even like a true black and orange. Interesting.
This is very exciting to me because, as you know, I'm on a crusade against use of the O's cap in game. If this is a thing...
Why are you so against the O's cap?
That's just boring. With such an amazing history of logos on this team. Mm-hmm. I mean, going back to the 50s, it's such a strong palette of logos to go to the bland, boring O's. I mean, it might as well be the A's or the M's for the, you know, for Minnesota. We have great logos, great logos. And in fact, a really good example of this is the fact that now that there are BP and clubhouse caps, the Orioles are cycling through. And right now the clubhouse cap is the, the white tricolor with the ornithologically correct bird from the 90s on there.
Yeah.
I love this. Go back to the logos that you've got. You can sell more hats. And I don't know. I just find the O's to be boring.
I agree with you. I don't know if I have quite the level of hatred and spite, but I appreciate the history. And again, if I'm going to pay $40 for a hat, I want a little bit more flair on the front of it.
You know, also during this discussion, and I feel like Derek Arnold may be involved. You know, he feels also on this journey with me as far as being on a crusade against the O. the arrival of the City Connect jerseys has interfered with the Friday tradition of
wearing the O's black cap.
Kits. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I think I read that they're now doing that on the Thursday preceding or what have you. Anyway, interesting. Some traditions may be shifting, and I'm here for it. And that is our show. Remember, you can find this and our entire catalog of indispensable episodes at birdseyeviewbaltimore.com.
Bird's Eye View is available for download wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, YouTube Music, Spotify, and many others. Please remember, rate, review the show. We appreciate the feedback. It encourages other people to listen for the first time.
Come and get social with us. You can email us at contact@birdseyeviewbaltimore.com. You can find us all over social media. We're on Blue Sky. We're on Threads. We have an Instagram account, Facebook. We have a Snapchat account. We're on the Ticks. We're on the Talks. We've got a Mastodon tooting. But the best place that you can find us is on a site that used to be called Twitter, where we do a thing that used to be called tweeting at Bird's Eye View, BAL. And with that, Baltimore and beyond, I will bid you all a fond adieu adieu.
Good night, Baltimore. Be safe out there, and let's go O's.
Remember, the government can't stop you from going back and listening to past episodes of Orioles Spastics.
I blew myself. Hey, Jake, here's $20. Go see a Star Wars.
Where is their money?
In a banana stand.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.